Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
Thanks for joining us for the fifth lecture of the winter lecture series, the Technology Management Program here at the University of California, Santa Barbara. We are delighted to end our section with Randy Churchill. He's Director of Business Development with PricewaterhouseCoopers. He's been very generous with his time. He spent the day with us and meeting with different student groups and faculty and staff. And has a lot to say about the economy and not all doom and gloom. Some tough numbers, but there are items to think about. And we really appreciate the time you spent putting it together, Randy. And if you'd please welcome Randy Churchill.
Thanks, Bill. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with the TMP program. It has been a good, long, active day. We had some good discussion over lunch and a lot of good questions. And I think the one thing I took away from the meeting we had with the student group was just the uncertainty that you all face right now. It's been a couple of decades since I came out of college, and there was certainly a recession going on in the early 80s, but nothing, I think, quite like we're seeing right now. So I wish you all luck. Let me say that. And with that, what I want to do is spend the next probably 30 to 35 minutes giving you a preview and an overview and some prognostications on the venture capital industry, both nationally and then what we see closer to home here in Southern California. But before I jump into it, and I think you all have copies of the report that I'm going to cover. If you don't, there's boxes up front. Don't get too alarmed. There's a lot of data, a lot of numbers. I'm not going to cover every one of those, and I'm not going to quiz you on it. What I will do is spend a little bit of time on each of the slides, give you maybe a takeaway thought or two, a trend, an uncertainty, something that is alarming or discouraging, or there are actually a couple of bright spots. And what this report covers is the venture capital investment data for 2008. It looks at it across the country, and then, as I mentioned, it drills down to our region. It looks at the different industries, the different stages of company, and the different rounds of funding. So it's one big pool of data. We slice it several different ways. And before I jump into that, just a couple of notes about what I do. I'm the Director of Business Development for PwC's technology practice in Southern California. And in that role, I cover geography from basically right here in Santa Barbara down to San Diego. Looking for venture-backed technology companies that can become clients of our firm. The best example of our success are companies like Cisco and Yahoo up in the Bay Area, Qualcomm down in San Diego, United Online in Los Angeles. Those were all companies that a few years ago were just basically a pipe dream or a business plan and a few million dollars in funding, have now grown to be some of our largest and most successful clients. And that's what we hope to foster and get out of monitoring these companies in this report. And I'm just curious as to how many of you in the room are aspiring or are entrepreneurs and want to start your own company, just by show of hands. So quite a few, if not most. And then how about the flip side? How many of you want to go into the venture industry and invest in companies? Okay. And then how many of you feel you've got a pretty good grasp on how the venture model works, how funds are raised and companies funded? Because if not, I thought I'd spend a few minutes on the front end, just giving you an overview of that. Good, so nobody. You do, though, I know. Let me spend a couple of minutes just telling you about the venture industry. And in this trying time with what's happening in our economy, I think there's no better example of capitalism than the venture industry. It really looks at companies or people with ideas, and it basically places bets on those ideas that sound like they could be most successful. And many times you'll get similar ideas competing for money. But essentially the way it works is there's a group of individuals who form a partnership, the general partners, and they usually have some type of domain expertise in a certain technology or technologies. They wouldn't, for instance, get together with an IT group and a life science group. So you'll get somebody with a team of people with some common knowledge around a certain industry or broad sector. Then they'll go out and they'll solicit investments from limited partners, in most cases large institutions like pension funds. In California, there's the California State Employees Pension Fund, CalPERS, and then the Teachers Fund, CalSTRS. and other large institutions that we've read a lot about in the paper recently that have large amounts of money to invest. And so these general partners will then form a fund, which typically has a 10-year life. So they'll say, okay, CalSTRS, I need to raise a $100 million fund because I want to invest in IT technology companies in California. They'll raise that fund, and then they'll go out and they'll ask entrepreneurs to submit business plans. They'll fund the good ones over a 10-year period. Typically, the investment period is over the first half, so maybe 5 years, and then the second half is all designed to harvest that investment. And in the good days, those investments would pay dividends, or they would produce liquidity in the form of an initial public offering, an IPO, or the company would get acquired. And that would return money to the fund, which would in turn return money to their limited partners. So everybody was happy. And that's important to kind of understand that ecosystem and that model, because what we're going to see in a few minutes is that model is under attack, both on the limited partner side and on the liquidity side. And as potential entrepreneurs going out seeking funding, I think it's a real advantage to understand how the system operates before you go out and approach an investor. So I just wanted to get that little intro out of the way before we dive into our report. Just a word about the report. My firm, PwC, has been tracking venture funding for about 14 years now. And in the heady days, early part of this decade with the internet bubble, it got a little unwieldy. There were so many investments. So we teamed up with the National Venture Capital Association. And then we also have Thomson Reuters as our data collection partner. So the three of us compile this data each quarter. We track all of the cash for equity investments made in the U.S. So it's all domestic companies. It's just cash for equity. It doesn't capture commitments or pipes or lease deals or anything like that. And if you're really interested in learning more about the survey, the definitions, the different industry groups, I would direct you to either our website, pwcmoneytree.com, or the NVCA website. Okay, this chart takes you all the way back to 1980 and looks at the level of venture funding in the U.S. on an annual basis. And you can see back to 1980, levels were fairly minuscule in comparison to what we see today. You know, less than $1 billion funded. And then we get up to where you can obviously see. If you can't see where the internet bubble is, let me know and I'll point it out, but it's pretty clear. This ramp up right here, 1995, by all accounts, is considered the start of the internet bubble. That's when Netscape went public with their IPO. So we started to see some huge increases in funding, and we topped $100 billion in 2000 in terms of venture funding. And that growth looked something kind of like that. And that was just not sustainable. We all know what happened. The bubble burst. There was a lot of fluff in the market. And we retrenched, and it was a similar time to what we're feeling now, pretty much a free fall. And that's right about the time I started with PwC, and at one point I thought maybe it was just me, because I did this presentation every quarter, and it seemed like the numbers just kept going down. And but then we finally stabilized, and we got back on a more, probably a healthier growth, $4 to $6 billion a quarter. You know, we topped $30 billion last year and total funding, and everybody thought, we're back on track, and we've got a lot of good deals. One thing that was missing, and that was the liquidity. We never got back to where we had a robust IPO market. And as we'll see later on in the presentation, the M&A market wasn't quite where it should be to give those returns back to the limited partners to make the model continue to work. So we dropped this year. It's the first year in 5 years we had a drop, and so I put a big question mark there. How big a drop? It kind of feels like a cliff. Especially when you look at the next slide, which shows the same funding data but breaks it down on a quarterly basis. You can see that far right quarter represents Q4, and that's a big drop down to just over $5 billion. And you can also see that the last three quarters, actually the last four quarters, have all been a progressive downward step. In fact, it's down 26%, and that's the lowest that we've seen. We draw a baseline, the lowest we've seen since Q1 of 2005. So that starts to make people get a little nervous when they say, what's happened? We're not getting funded like we used to. And please don't quote me on this, but I would say, just from looking at what's happened in the first two quarters of this year, tracking that against what happened the first two quarters of last year, that we would expect funding in 2009, at least the first part of it, to be down substantially more, maybe another 40, 50%. That's just my personal guess. If you look around the country, though, that $28 billion so dollars is distributed, fairly rationally around. It always amazes me that there's little pockets in the north central of Colorado or the south central region that they have, true venture markets and some pretty significant dollars going in. But as you might expect, California is the big winner. In 2008, the state as a total received almost $15 billion, just pretty much $14.5 billion. Silicon Valley, as we all know, is the big winner, the home of venture capital and venture-backed companies. $11 billion went into Silicon Valley. 1,170 deals were funded, and that comprised about 39% of the total. And that's pretty consistent with what we see quarter to quarter and year to year, over a third of all venture capital into Silicon Valley. Southern California, as a region, received $3.2 billion. 363 deals were funded, and that's about 11% of the national total. And that, too, is about on par. We've been in that 10 to 11%. Los Angeles, we received $1.3 billion, or 5% of the total. Orange County, $661 million. With 2%, and San Diego, $1.2 billion, or 4% of the total. And not to offend anyone, but Santa Barbara is included in the Los Angeles region, so it's a pretty wide reach when we define the LA region. And if we rank the rank the regions, you can see Silicon Valley in that huge lead, about a 3x lead over the other regions. New England is the second largest recipient of venture capital. 2 years ago, we surpassed New England, but we've fallen back, mainly due to drops in biotech funding in San Diego. And New England, as you may know, has a huge and robust biotech funding ecosystem. And then if we look at the last five-quarter trend, and this still is regional data, you can see that, as I mentioned earlier, Silicon Valley attracts about a third of the venture capital. New England at about 13%. I think our numbers for Southern California are, we left out one of the subregions, so bump each of those up by about 3%, so it's about 3% each, or I'm sorry, about 10% consistently, and it dropped down to about 8% this last quarter. And then New York and Texas round out the top five. The important thing to glean from this slide, if you're an entrepreneur looking for funding and you're not going to stay in this region, if you take these top five regions, aggregate them together, it's about 70% of all venture capital. So if you're looking to go elsewhere, a lot of states, I know my home state of Michigan is really making a push to attract venture-funded companies, but these five regions right now capture about 70% of all funding. And why is that important? It's because VCs want to invest in an ecosystem that has critical mass around an industry. I've known biotech companies in Santa Barbara, for instance, that seeking funding, it was good technology, and they were told, yes, we will fund you, but you need to move to San Jose or San Diego where there's a critical mass around your industry. So do your homework, find out where there is critical mass for your particular sector, and I would pick the appropriate region. Okay, speaking of industries, if we look at the same data and slice it by industry, you can see that software led the way in 08 with almost $5 billion invested into 891 deals. That was down about 10%. Biotech was third with $4.5 billion into 479 deals, and that was down about 14%. The new arrival is that second bar, industrial energy, and that is important because that includes clean tech and renewable energy, which is really one of our bright spots. That industry sector attracted $4.7 billion, 345 deals, and that was up 43% over last year. The last two industries in the top five, med devices, received $3.5 billion, and then media and entertainment, about $2 billion into 407 deals. And like I did with the regions, I put together a five-quarter trend for the top five industries and shows you that software and is fairly consistent. Biotech has been on the uptick recently, and that clean tech sector is fairly strong, as is med devices and media and entertainment. And the important thing from this slide is if you take all of these top five industries, put them together, you get about 67 or two-thirds of all venture capital goes into these top five industries. So the trick is to find one of these industries and go to one of those regions I just showed, and I think your odds of attracting capital are going to be much greater. And then we've been tracking biotech and med devices, and collectively that comprises the life sciences sector. And you can see on the far right set of bars that over the last few quarters, life sciences has been fairly robust in terms of funding, consistently gets about a quarter of all venture capital. I don't know, how many of you are interested in life sciences versus IT companies? Mostly IT-based? I threw a couple of slides in on clean tech because that is, as I mentioned, one of the bright spots. And this shows the dramatic increase in clean tech funding from 2003. And it's up to, in the fourth quarter, you know, almost $1 billion. It was over $1 billion in Q3 of 08. In total, we're up over $4 billion. So clean tech, in terms of funding, is definitely a bright spot. And if you look at the subsectors within clean tech, you can see that solar, the far left column here, attracted almost $2 billion. A couple of comments on clean tech is these sectors are difficult from a venture perspective, mainly because solar, for instance, in particular, is highly capital intensive. So the amount of money that needs to go in to finance a solar project, which is really, in most instances, is a power plant. You're buying land, you're buying these huge solar capital projects, look more like a project finance deal. And by that I mean venture capital typically funds the technology risk on a project. So a venture capitalist will come in and put to work smaller amounts of money to prove out a technology, do several rounds of funding to get that technology to the point that it's feasible, and then you bring in some of the later stage and private equity money. Solar energy deals in particular require big chunks of money right away. So if you're pursuing that market, the bad news is not a lot of VCs want to get into it. It's more later stage private equity firms, hedge funds, a lot of the larger institutions that have been under attack and have some of them gone away recently. The good news is President Obama's stimulus plan has announced that for some of these clean tech and solar and alternative energy projects, that these infrastructure projects, they've allocated $83 billion to jumpstart that. So while it's not true venture funding, I think you're going to see this sector really flourish if we can figure out where some of those stimulus dollars are going and how they're going to be allocated. At the end, that's fine. Can you keep it?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Next couple of slides look at stage of funding and then the round of funding. And stage of funding relates to the company as to how mature it is, whether it's, you know, startup seed, early stage expansion, or later. The important thing to glean from this slide is the top two bars, expansion and later stage, representing more mature companies later in the pipeline, have probably received multiple rounds of funding. They continue to receive the bulk of funding. In fact, $21.5 billion or 75% of funding went into those more mature companies. What that means is front end of the pipeline, entrepreneurs are trying to just get started are kind of in line behind these more mature companies. And the reason for that, as I mentioned early on, there's this pipeline where the limited partner money comes in, the general partners invest it, and then it comes back through this harvest period that the liquidity options, the opportunities for IPOs and M&As are minuscule at this point, very hard to come by. So venture investors are forced to continually fund their good technologies, keep them in their portfolio longer, and thus this huge bulge in the top two bars. Likewise, if we look at the round of funding, which is the number of funds or number of rounds of funding a company has received, that top bar, fifth and beyond, VCs typically use the alphabet to classify their rounds. So an A round would be a first round. That fifth and beyond is really E round and beyond. And we've seen G, E, and F rounds. And again, that's because mature companies, good technology, they can't find a good return on it in the public markets or in the M&A market. So they'll continue to fund it. And that's taking away from the lower level funding. We still had significant funding in first round deals is represented by the second bar, over $6 billion. But I've got a slide a little later that'll cross-reference that stage of funding with first rounds and show that not all first round money goes into early stage companies, if that makes sense. If we look at the trend of first round fundings, and the reason I'm focusing on this a little bit more is First rounds are really the barometer or the bellwether of the industry. If we can get the first rounds up, what we like to see is first rounds, back to this slide for a moment. We like to see this bar being larger than this bar. You want more first round fundings than later stage. That just means the market is in equilibrium, the venture market, and the pipeline is flowing because you're getting more exits than you are first rounds. So if you look at the trend, you can see during the internet bubble, almost $9 billion a quarter in first round deals, and now we've kind of dipped and recovered, and then we're sliding back down to where we're just over $1 billion in the last quarter. And I would anticipate in Q1 of 09 that we're well below the $1 billion mark in A rounds. And then this next slide just looks at the first round fundings as a percentage of total funding, and you can see the trend, kind of the ups and downs, but the important thing is to look at that last quarter, where 20.5% of the dollars funded went into A rounds, and that's the lowest since Q2 of 04, and almost 29% of the number of deals funded, and that's the lowest we've seen since Q1 of 04. So we're kind of reverting back to the recovery days after the bubble, and I would expect those numbers to go down next quarter as well. Okay, this is the slide I referenced a minute ago. This takes the round of funding of the first rounds and shows the distribution across stage of companies. So as I mentioned, you'd like to see more of the first rounds into these seed and startup companies. There's only 18% of the A round goes into the real early stage, the seed stage. The early stage gets 47%, but about a third of it is going into those more mature companies. And same reason is that venture capitalists are looking for less risky, more mature companies to deploy their money in because there's just not a lot of runway and expectation for the seed rounds. They want to invest in companies that are closer to an exit. And then this slide tracks across all deals the average and the median deal size. The average deal size in the most recent quarter, you can see in the end there, dipped to $6 million, and that's the lowest we've seen since the first quarter of 2003. And then the median deal size dropped even more dramatically down to $3 million, and that's actually off the chart. I don't know how far back we'd have to go to when we had a median deal size lower than $3 million, and that tells me that some of the larger deals just aren't getting funded. It's kind of dropping that median. Okay, that's the national scene, and now we look a little closer. You know, what do you expect in your neighborhood? Here's the Southern California funding chart for the same period back to 97, and it looks very much like we saw in the national with the internet bubble. We experienced that here as well. The bellwether there at the end, $485 million, and that's the lowest we've seen since Q1 of 05. It's a drop of 11% annually from 07, and then that last quarter is actually 38% down from what we saw in Q3. And again, I would expect in our area in Southern California that the Q1 numbers will be equally lower, dramatically lower. I've got a little bit of good news at the end, so bear with me. Now, the industries in Southern California that receive the attention, I mentioned industrial energy. We're a hotbed in this region, particularly L.A. and the northern Southern California. $736 million went into 42 deals. Med devices, primarily in Orange County, attracted $518 million in 44 deals. And biotech, which is mostly down in San Diego, received $479 million into 49 deals. And then we also have a fairly diverse second tier of industries led by semiconductor, software, telecom, IT services, and media and entertainment. And you might ask, well, what about the internet? You know, this LA in particular is a strong digital media center. Where are those deals and where are they represented? When the internet came on the scene several years ago, we contemplated having a separate sector to track internet deals, but quickly realized that the internet isn't really an industry in and of itself. It's more of a distribution channel for several industries. So where you find those deals are in media and entertainment for sure, and in retail services and software, and then also I think consumer products and services. So they're kind of distributed in those four groups. But we do track what we call internet-specific deals. It's not on the chart, but in 2008, there was about $300 million in Southern California that went into just internet-specific deals. And what that means is a company that its business model is, and business is derived mainly from the internet. So that would encompass online retail as well as some content delivery and social networking. And you might then say, well, $300 million doesn't seem like a whole lot compared to some of these other industries. But the thing to keep in mind is, unlike clean tech and some of these other more capital-intensive industries, you can start an internet company for a few hundred thousand or a couple of million and be very successful. So $300 million represents quite a few deals and really a lot of traction. And compared to other regions, it's a fairly high number. And if we divide that SoCal industry group down into our three subregions, I mentioned LA with its new flagship industry, cleantech. I was mentioning at lunch today that up until a couple of quarters ago, we never knew from quarter to quarter which industry would lead the way in LA. It was sometimes software, sometimes media and entertainment. I think you would agree that cleantech, industrial energy, has emerged as a clear winner, and we would expect that to continue as well. We've got several strong solar and electric automotive companies and some other true clean tech enabling technology companies developing in and around LA, including some up here in Santa Barbara. And Orange County, as I mentioned, led by Med Devices. Orange County as a region was down 19%. For the year, with its only 56 deals funded, and about half of that $660 million went into Med Devices. Pretty strong showing with semiconductors and some energy deals in Orange County as well. And then San Diego. San Diego is a bit of an anomaly these days. I think last year we had almost $900 million funded in biotech, and you can see it's down about 55%. The region as a whole is down 39%, but biotech took a big hit. And we're not quite sure why. Other regions like Boston didn't drop proportionally with San Diego. One explanation I've heard from a venture capitalist I had on a panel a few weeks ago said that there are a lot of small deals in San Diego, small biotech deals with a limited number of entrepreneurs that keep rolling out deal after deal. And in his words, he said the investors have finally caught on, and they've just quit funding these small startup companies. Whereas New England, for instance, has a lot of more mature life science companies that are a little farther down the path to success, and so they continue to get higher levels of funding. Okay, so if you're looking for funding, who do you want to look to? This list shows the most active venture investors in Southern California. Redpoint Ventures is based in Santa Monica. They also have offices up in Menlo Park. And they were fairly active with 31 investments. Those aren't all made in Southern California. That's firm-wide. Rustic Canyon is also in Santa Monica with 21 investments, and Clearstone, also in Santa Monica, 17 investments, and they also maintain offices in the Bay Area and India. And then Enterprise Partners down in San Diego was active with 13 investments, as was Palomar, which is Orange County and L.A.-based. And then the Tech Coast Angels, that's an organized angel group with chapters in L.A., Santa Barbara, Orange County, and San Diego. And you might say, why are they in your survey? They're not a true VC. But we also track organized angel groups, those that act more like a small VC. So they're active with 13 deals as well. And then the important thing for you, if you're looking for funding in this region, is who's actually investing here. So this flips it around and looks at the top investors in the region, led by Domain Associates, based in New Jersey, but they maintain an office down in Orange County. They do a lot of early-stage biotech funding. DFJ is a large fund up in Menlo Park, and they also have a small affiliate fund that has a big presence here in Santa Barbara called DFJ Frontier. And I can make introductions to anybody who wants to meet those guys. I mentioned the Tech Coast Angels. They were 13 for 13, which means the previous slide, all of their deals funded were in this region, and then followed by Sanderling, Venrock, and Versant, all out of our area, but fairly active in the area. Important thing to consider is venture investing is really a local activity. By that I mean venture investors don't like to travel too far. They will put 3 or 4 or 5 million into your company, and then they want to take a board seat. They want to be very active investors. They want to show up at your monthly board meetings. They want to control, and if things get off track, they want to help you put it back on track. So they don't like to travel, and they won't travel too far. But the issue we suffer here in Southern California is we don't have a lot of local VCs. The Silicon Valley VCs will jump on a plane, jump on Southwest, fly down, spend an afternoon, and fly back. So as a result of that, most of our money comes from outside the region. And I did a quick check, and last year, over probably about 30 to 35% of the money invested in SoCal comes from San Jose, Silicon Valley. About 13% from the East Coast, New York in particular, 6% from the Midwest, 5% each from District of Columbia, New England, and then about another 5% from out of the country. So a wide distribution. So what that tells me, if I'm an entrepreneur and I'm looking for funding, it's not so important, at least in Southern California, to find a local investor. What it's important to do is find an investor who invests in your space. And you can do that by Googling your sector. You can do that by just checking out websites of investors you know. You can also do that by accessing reports like this and find out which investors are investing in wireless applications or whatever it is you're focused on. And then just by contrast, I threw this in so you get an idea of what some of the larger funds across the nation are doing. DFJ we saw on the previous slide in SoCal, but they've done 96 deals in 08. They did, I think, 100 in 07. NEA, 82 deals. Polaris and Kleiner Perkins, which I'm sure you've all heard of, do over 70 to 75 deals. So still some very active funds. I would expect next year, though, these numbers to plummet as the VCs are all holding their money pretty close to the chest, wondering, what's going to come in from their limited partners and what kind of liquidity they're going to get from their existing portfolio. Wrap it up with the last few slides. I've talked a lot about exits and the lack of exits. Circled some numbers here for you. In 08, there were only 6 IPOs, and this is across the U.S. 6 IPOs raised a total of $470 million. That compares with 86 completed last year, and that wasn't really a robust year, but over $10 billion was raised. And I presented this at lunch today, and it was pointed out that even more dramatic is the trend. 5 of the 6 were done in the first quarter. So really now, almost 12 months running, there's only been 1 IPO completed in the entire nation. And that's just pretty much unheard of in the last several decades. Likewise, on the M&A side, 260 mergers were completed in 08. The average deal size, $145 million. That's 100 fewer than last year, and the average deal size is $32 million less. So again, this is a big metric. If I'm an investor, I'm saying I'm going to put money into your company. How am I going to get it out? These are really the two methods to get the money out, and they're not looking that promising at the moment. So you might say, why do limited partners continue to fund venture capital? For the past few years, I pointed to this chart and I've said, well, if you look at this, is the all venture return over a 20-year investment horizon, it's paying over 15-16%. You look at NASDAQ and the S&P, they're much lower than that. So it's an attractive investment. It's higher risk, but it pays higher dividends or higher returns. What's happened now in the market, if I'm a limited partner, let's say I'm one of these big pension funds, say I've got $100 billion under management. I allocate that across different investment classes. One of the investment classes is alternative investments, and that includes the high-risk, high-yield assets like timber and natural gas and venture capital. So let's say of that $100 billion, I've got a 10% allocation to that high-risk alternative asset class. That would be $10 billion goes into venture. And I hold that, and because they're not marketable, they're not public securities, the value is pretty constant. And then say the other $900 billion is in marketable securities, hedge funds, other things. Well, we all know what's happened to that market. The bottom's fallen out. So what that's done to my 10% allocation of venture capital has made that relative percentage go way up. And they refer to that as the denominator effect, and that's really affected the industry because as a pension fund, now I say, I can't put more money into venture. I've got to put less in because I've got to get that 10% down. So we've seen the emergence of secondary funds come out, and they say, okay, we'll come in and we'll take that off your balance sheet. We'll buy your fund from you. And so that's one thing that's happened. And the other thing that's happened is the limited partners tell the general partnership, they say, hey, I know we've committed $100 million to your fund, and they don't pay it all up front and keep it in the bank. They sign a contract that says, I commit that I will fund these deals when you make a capital call. So when you invest it, send me an email, and I'll fund your deal. Well, what's happened recently is these limited partners have picked up the phone and called the general partners, and they said, hey, I know I've got a commitment to you, and I'll honor that commitment, but please don't make a capital call this quarter. You know, the market's crazy. I just need to see what's going to happen before I can get liquid. So that's another factor that's really slowed down that pipeline. There's this uncertainty over, even though we've got big commitments from the limited partners, there's uncertainty as to when they'll actually fund the deals. So speaking of limited partners, if we look at a couple of these numbers, in 2008, there were 211 new venture funds raised, and they raised a total of almost $28 billion. In Q4, only 43 funds raised a total of $3.4 billion. And how does that compare? If you look at 2007, there was $35 billion raised. So this number, 28, you know, down $7 billion, and that's the first decrease we've seen in a couple of years. So again, that just kind of brings home the point that the money on the front end or the that pipeline is definitely in question. So what does all that mean? I've kind of thrown out a lot of stuff in a hurry, and hopefully you've grasped some of it. But this is kind of my take for the 2008 year in review. Basically, U.S. venture investing dropped significantly. It's the biggest drop we've seen in 5 years. Continued poor liquidity options. Those opportunities are pretty much non-existent in terms of IPO and M&A activity. And as I mentioned, that questionable LP commitment. And then kind of throw on top of that, you know, the overall economic turmoil that we're all in the middle of. It just makes for a lot of uncertainty. And uncertainty, as we've seen in the public markets, make investors very frightened, and they just want to go away or sit on the sidelines. So we're seeing a lot of that. In Southern California, it's kind of mirrored what's happened nationally. We've had an 11% decrease in 2008 and a 38% decrease in the most recent quarter. And that raises that question, is the venture model broken? And I think that's what we've seen is both sides of the pipeline are getting pressure, and there's a lot of stagnation. So I would say if it's not broken, it's at least frozen or reduced significantly. Early stage investment is suffering, and again, it's because of that lack of liquidity. The bright spots, and I've heard this a lot recently from a lot of venture capitalists who know a lot more about it than I do, but you know, always hear, yeah, but a lot of good companies come out of a depression or a recessionary period. In particular, what we're seeing in our region is clean tech and renewable energy and a lot of digital media companies. So maybe VC needs a bailout. That's kind of what I've come to realize. Everybody else is getting bailed out. Why not venture capital? And you know, seriously speaking, though, as I mentioned, there has been an allocation of stimulus dollars, about $83 billion, that's going to go into clean tech. There may be others. With the new administration, I think there's a different take on stem cell research. In fact, I know there is. And there may be some dollars to go into that. And you know, some of these other industry sectors that are important to our infrastructure push may receive some national backing, and I think that would be welcome. Lastly, I just wanted to throw this up. This is an answer to that question. Every time I hear that, you know, good companies come out of a recession, I say, well, what companies? Show me. This is actually a list that I poached from a presentation by Dixon Dahl, who's the chairman of the NVCA. And there are some good companies, you know, Adobe and Apple and FedEx. I think GE we might take off the list now, but HP and Microsoft and Sun. And the important thing, the takeaway here is that 18 of the 30 companies in the Dow Jones actually were born out of recessionary times. And, you know, it's probably just really a tribute to their resilience. I mean, it makes sense that the strongest companies are going to survive. And if you can survive a recession, you can certainly flourish in good times. But I think that's the positive spin. If you've got a good, strong technology, and if you're fortunate enough to attract venture funding, kind of hunker down and be very cash efficient. Hopefully we'll see you on this list in the next decade. So that's pretty much it. I would also welcome you, if you do have specific questions, I'm certainly going to answer some now, but if you have specific data questions, feel free to contact me by phone or email, and I'm happy to help out. Thank you.
Thanks for your talk. Just a question about how you define investment. sometimes economists have a kind of non-intuitive definition. You're talking about the percentage of venture capital as a total of as a percentage of total investment. Is that all kinds of? Is that loans? Is that angel? Or is this something different?
No, the total investment as defined by the survey is cash for equity investments in U.S. domestic companies. So it just tracks institutional venture capital firms and then organized angel groups. Does that make sense?
Yes. Okay.
You had mentioned that VC firms have been more willing to fund companies in like later stages.
Yes.
But in light of the recession and seeing like all these big companies like failing, don't you think or do you think that venture capitalist firms might be more willing to have early seed funding for companies that haven't gotten off the ground yet?
Yes and yes. And let me answer that in two ways. One is, if I'm a large fund that has several more mature companies in my portfolio that I've already invested millions of dollars in, and it's good technology, and the company is meeting its milestones and progressing, but it hasn't, the market hasn't brought forth an opportunity for a good exit. And by that I mean there's no IPO window and they can't get the multiple on the M&A exit, but they've got good technology and it's a good team and everything else is healthy, I'm going to want to protect my original investment by keeping that company going. So I'm almost required to keep it funded. And the reason I don't want to bring in fresh money from another firm is if I bring in a new investor into the scheme, they're going to want to change the valuation. Maybe a down round, which means a lower valuation than the last round, which means my initial investment is going to be diluted. So I'm incented to keep those companies funded. On the flip side, you're right, there's a lot of early stage funds that say, hey, this is a great time to fund a company because valuations are low. I can get entrepreneurs to agree to terms that they wouldn't have agreed to 2 years ago, basically pick up a company as a bargain. And there's technology, certainly we're going to come out of this at some point. And there are some necessity type technologies that are just killer apps that I want to be in on. So it depends on the fund. If it's a bigger fund with later stage companies, I'm going to protect. In fact, I've talked to some funds. They say, I've reserved money for my existing portfolio. That means I've got a smaller amount available, but I'm still funding new companies.
Hi, Randy.
Hi.
Yes. One comment. I agree wholeheartedly with you about the founding a company in a recession, in particular FedEx. I think they sucked up for several years over 50% of all of the VC investments for several years. That was one fact. The other fact is a little bit more upsetting. Every single round, with the exception of the last one, got wiped out. And in fact, if you invested on the IPO and held on to it for 10 years, you made out like a bandit, you know, because the valuations were so low. It's a very, very difficult time to invest in the middle of a recession as well because of this. The problem of the valuations. The question I wanted to ask you, though, is to what extent are your numbers distorted a little bit by the U.S. investors investing in, out of internationally? In other words, there's a lot of money being raised in the U.S. that's also invested internationally. So although the numbers may be down in the U.S., they might be investing other money outside the U.S.
Yeah, that's a good question, and that also came up at lunch. I don't have data to support it, but I know anecdotally from some of our venture capital clients, most of the firms I know of, when they establish an office in China or India, they will create a separate fund in those countries. So they typically don't invest the U.S. funds into offshore companies for a couple of reasons. One in particular, I think, is just fear of nationalization at some point if the Chinese government decides, you know, they want to take some of those companies and nationalize them. They want to keep that fund separate. And I think in a lot of cases, the LPs, the limited partners, are investing in either a domestic fund or an Asian fund or an offshore fund. But to your point, that is a good question. If I'm going to raise a new fund and I decide to base it in India, it's obviously taking away from my focus in the U.S. But I don't know what the total effect of that. The other thing I think, I don't know if it dilutes it or skews it or doesn't paint the full picture, is in this current environment, there's a lot more kind of venture debt going on. A lot of companies that have raised maybe one round can't raise another round of equity, but we know that they're going to get some to some point in the future because it's good technology. So they'll take on a bridge or a convertible loan. And a lot of the VCs are making those loans, and there's a lot of specialized venture debt, so we don't capture the debt either. So there's still some funding and capitalization going on, but it's just not all pure equity, if that makes sense. I didn't mean to create such a dour, somber crowd, but please don't shoot me. I'm just the messenger here, but...
Do you think that the proportion of VC funding in different industries is any indication of future growth in those industries?
No, absolutely. That's what I try to convey. I think the clean tech, you know, basically renewable energy and clean tech are two that are industries that are bound to take off, especially with the support it's going to get from the Obama administration. And then I think because of the low capital requirements and just the kind of the continued momentum, digital media, which kind of encompasses all kinds of internet and content plays, I think especially in L.A., are going to continue to grow. In the traditional sectors, semiconductors, things like that, that we kind of equate with the heady days of, you know, Intel and other venture-backed companies that made it big, a lot of those technologies are becoming commoditized. So it's not so much about the development of the technology. It is about taking the cost out of them and being able to produce them at a cheaper rate. So a lot of that stuff is probably going to, you'll see the venture funding dwindle in those areas. But yeah, I think clean tech, digital media, and renewable energy are probably the top three in my view. Question here?
Oh, yeah, sir. Excellent lecture.
Oh, nice.
To spy your metric, what is the northernmost border of Silicon Valley? And also, is Sand Hill Road still going on?
Wait, the first question.
By your metric, what is the northernmost border of Silicon Valley?
Oh, for that region?
Yes.
That's a good question. It's probably farther north than you would expect because the LA region extends actually past Santa Barbara. Is there what's the impetus?
I would assume it would probably be around Santa Rosa. I mean, this based upon what's out there, but
we can offline get onto the website and find out that definition.
No, I just remember because I lived in the Bay Area during the whole initial tech bubble, and Sand Hill Road was always like VC hotspot. And I wonder if you had any idea if it's still.
No, it's still. I was just up there on Tuesday. It's still a VC hotspot, and that's one of the advantages it has. Is as an entrepreneur, you can meet with, you know, 4, 5, 6 VCs in an afternoon, just basically, you know, almost walk from office to office, and that's one of the. You know, one of the things we don't have in Southern California. But, you know, Sand Hill Road is still the mecca of venture capital, even though the volume, I think, is kind of shrunk or frozen temporarily.
Randy, we've seen some tough numbers on the VC financing for the students here who might be looking at a startup for themselves. Is bootstrapping an option that you see that's going to be more and more predominant as we see a holdback perhaps on the VC side for 24 months or so?
Absolutely, and by bootstrapping, you kind of self-funding, creative ways to get a company started. We used to say that your first VC is your Visa card, but I think that's changed now too because the credit card companies have gotten a lot stricter. So I think you max out your relationships with your parents and your grandparents, and you find funding where you can. You get your company started any way you can, and venture capitalists are really looking for what they call traction. And what they mean by traction varies from fund to fund. You know, essentially, it means you can go to them and show them something more than an idea, in many cases more than technology that's in beta. They want to see that you've got customers and in some cases revenue. And, you know, if not customers, at least a referenceable maybe a one-off customer or somebody you did a consulting project for that says, yes, this technology works, and if it's mass-produced or commercialized, I'll buy it. Bootstrapping, I think, is more important for that reason, and also because these organized angel groups and actually disorganized angel groups, for that matter, are finding it a lot more difficult to write personal checks. You know, unless you can find one of these big Uber angels who isn't affected by what's happening right now, the angel investors I know, especially the Tech Coast angels, are, you know, finding it. Spouses are starting to complain when they write their $50,000 check, where, you know, 2 years ago I think they each committed to fund 2 or 3 deals and they were fairly successful. So yeah, the early stage funding definitely hard to come by.
Randy Churchill, thanks for joining us at the Technology Management Program.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.